You are listening to the Mid-Current Church Podcast. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and find us on Facebook and Instagram. And now, here is Pastor Sten Carlson with today's message.
In the course of my reflection and in quiet time this week, I came across quite possibly the most poetic, the most thought-provoking, the most soul-stirring, the most spiritually stimulating question posed by the great theological minds of the 1970s British rock band, The Clash. Okay, they contemplate one of life's deepest questions. Should I stay or should I go now? If I go, there will be trouble. If I stay, it will be double. So come on and let me know, should I stay or should I go? Okay. Based on the scenario they are describing here, no option seems good. There's trouble if you go. There's even more trouble if you stay. And I just wonder, I don't know for sure, I just wonder if any of you know that feeling. Okay. Now, like so many, you know, famous rock songs or just famous songs in general, this one appears to be about love and relationships and where that guy stays with the girl. And that's not necessarily what I'm asking you to consider today. It's not necessarily what I wonder about today. What I do wonder about, what I am asking you to consider, is whether or not you know the feeling of what it is like to have to make a decision when no option seems good. You ever been there before? Got to make some kind of decision when truthfully no option seems good. Maybe it was a relationship decision that you had to make. Maybe it was a really big financial decision that you weren't expecting, but you had to make, and you're going, there's no option seems good here. Maybe it was a career decision. Maybe it was an ethical or it was a moral, you know, decision that you were confronted with in the office or in the conference room, or maybe it was a parenting decision that you were confronted with, and you go, man, I don't know how we're going to navigate this. No option seems good. Or maybe it was something else that left you asking, what do I do? I mean, maybe you're looking at someone else, a spouse or a friend or someone else. Maybe you're asking, what do we do? I mean, do we stay or do we go? Do we say yes or do we say no? Do we go along with what's ever happening here, or do we put our foot down? Do we slow down, or do we keep pressing forward? Do we just fade into the background, or do we actually take a step off the sidelines? Do we sit down quietly, or do we speak up? Do I just go with the flow, or do I actually challenge what it is this playing out in front of me? I wonder how many of you have ever had to make decisions. You're going, man, I don't know what to do. No option seems like it's a good one. The difficult thing about the life that we live and some of these decisions that we have to make when neither option seems good, the difficult part is most of the time there's really, I know we wish this was different, there's really no ultimate blueprint, right? There's not always an owner's manual that says pick one, or that says make that choice, or that says you should go in that direction. And so if there's a chance that any of you here today, maybe some of you watching online right now, if there's a chance that you are weighing something, you're contemplating something right now, that you're staring in the face of some kind of difficult decision when neither option really seems good, if that's any of you here today, then I'm actually really glad that you are here today, that you tuned in online. Because when we scan through Scripture, when we flip through the pages and through the stories of Scripture, I think we're going to start to see, number one, we'll start to see that really there are no guarantees. But what I think we'll start to see too is that there maybe, just possibly, is some kind of formula for us to follow. No guarantees, but there is kind of a standard. There is some bit of a formula that is set for us to follow. In fact, we're going to turn to a pivotal moment in the life of God's people generations ago. We're going to turn to a pivotal moment in their life as a people. We're going to learn a really, really, really valuable lesson about how we navigate some of the impossible decisions that we have to face when there really seems like there is no good option. We're going to learn a great lesson. And interestingly enough, we're going to see this lesson demonstrated for us in the story and in the life of a mom. See what I did there? That's why you pay me the big bucks, okay? We're going to look We're going to look at a particular moment. This is great. We're going to look at a particular moment in the life of Moses's mom. And when we finish, my hope, sat praying this week, man, what I want to share with Midcurrent this week. My hope is that when we finish here today, you will have a lot more confidence. I can't give you any guarantees on how life is going to work out, but when we're finished here, my hope is that you will have a lot more confidence in how exactly to approach, how to navigate some of life's more challenging circumstances, some of life's more challenging moments, or some of the more difficult decisions that we have to make. And so what we're going to do is we're going to turn all the way back to the Old Testament book of Exodus at a time when God's people were living as slaves in Egypt. Before we get to Moses and Moses' mother in particular and the lesson that she teaches us, let me give you just a little background first on how exactly God's people ended up at the place that they are in at this time. It all stems back very quickly here. It all stems back to one of the Bible's other great heroes by the name of Joseph. Think Joseph and the amazing Technicolor dream coat. Okay. Joseph and his family, they were, you know, from the nation of Israel. Israel was, you know, God's kind of starting lineup, right? And so Joseph's brothers, he's born into a big family. Joseph's brothers hated him so much that they sold him into slavery in Egypt, in a far off foreign land. While he was enslaved and while he was imprisoned in Egypt, Joseph actually became an incredibly vital asset to Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Almost, he became like a right-hand man, a consultant to Pharaoh during a time first of abundant harvest and then followed up by a time of extreme famine. And Joseph was so valuable and he was so successful that he became kind of second in command over all of Egypt because of how well he helped Pharaoh sort through this whole deal. And so during the 7 years of famine, right, there first there was 7 years of just bountiful harvest, and then during the 7 years of famine, all of Joseph's family and all the people of Egypt, all the people of Israel, all his people, they came to Egypt. All of Israel came to Egypt because Egypt had stored up all the food and all of Israel was ultimately allowed to live and to settle in Egypt for generations, okay? That's how they got there. That's how all of God's people ended up in Egypt. Fast forward now generations into the future. So there's tons of Israelites or Hebrews now living in Egypt. And the current Pharaoh, it's not the same Pharaoh that pulled Joseph out of obscurity, okay? The current Pharaoh, he has no memory, no recollection of how God's people ended up in Egypt. And he actually starts surveying the scene and he's getting a little concerned. He's going, hey, what? This is not good. We're getting outnumbered here. He's going, this can't happen. He's going, if all these Israelites, if all these Hebrew people, if they keep growing in number, they're going to take us out someday. And so here's what happened. This new Pharaoh, he turned all of the Hebrew people living in Egypt into slaves to serve Egypt and all their needs. And in fear that Israel was raising up too many young, strong boys who could soon join Israel's army and pose a massive threat to Egypt, Pharaoh even created just an evil, evil, evil law for the land that all Hebrew-born boys in Egypt, all Hebrew boys born in Egypt, they were to be killed or thrown into the Nile River, where essentially they would either, you know, they would either drown or be eaten by alligators that were known to inhabit the Nile River in that region. Okay, and so it's at this point. God's people are now slaves. Pharaoh's thrown out this just horrific law. And it's at this point that we're first introduced to Moses, another great hero from the Bible, but more importantly, we're introduced to his mother. Here's the beginning of Exodus chapter 2. You can follow along with me on the side screens. It says this: about this time, a man and a woman from the tribe of Levi got married, and the woman became pregnant and gave birth to a son. This was Moses. And she saw that he was a special baby, and she kept him hidden for 3 months. Now, side note here, some of you may, if you're really reading along closely, some of you may be going, well, that's odd, that because he was special, she kept him. You might be going, well, what would she have done if he was not special? And that's a fair question, but here's what I want to tell you. That's not really what was happening, just in case if that seems funny to any of you. The Hebrew phrase, this is actually very cool. The Hebrew phrase, saw that he was special, is technically, if you literally translate it, what she said is that she saw that he was good, which is the very same phrase recorded in the creation account in Genesis when God created the world and he saw that it was good, okay? So this is Moses' mom looking at her own creation and responding the very same way. She saw that he was good, that this baby was a massive blessing and that she could not fathom parting with, that she could not fathom sending him to die. And so she went to great lengths, actually risking her own safety to defy Pharaoh's command. Here's verse 3, right? She had hid him as long as she could, went to great lengths, but then here's verse 3. But when she could no longer hide him, tried as long as she could, but when she could no longer hide him, when she could no longer allow him to stay, because they would all be in danger, but she could hardly afford to let him go either, right? She couldn't let him stay, but she couldn't even fathom throwing him into the Nile. When both options seemed like equally unthinkable, what does she do? She comes up with an alternate plan. She revises her plans. It says this: she could no longer hide him, so she got a basket. And she a basket made of papyrus reeds, and she waterproofed it with tar and pitch. She put the baby in the basket and laid it among the reeds along the bank of the Nile River. It probably, we don't know what's going through her mind. It probably felt like a death sentence either way, but this is all she could think to do. She made him a little boat, and she sent him down the river. Some scholars suggest that maybe Moses' mother saw what was happening down the way and that somehow she was able to kind of see a few steps ahead, which would have given her confidence in this decision. And while we don't know that for sure, here is what happens next. It's verse 4. It says this: the baby's sister, Moses' own sister, then stood at a distance, watching to see what would happen as her brother was just set into the Nile River. Verse 5, soon Pharaoh's daughter, King Pharaoh, right? So his daughter, the princess, Pharaoh's daughter came down to bathe in the river, and the attendants were with her. They walked along the riverbank. When the princess saw the basket among the reeds, she sent her maid to get it for her. And when the princess opened it, she saw the baby. The little boy was crying. She felt sorry for him. This must be one of the Hebrew children, she said, okay? And here's this is good stuff. Here's where the story starts to get really good. Verse 7, then the baby's sister approached the princess. Remember, she was kind of waiting over here. She approached the princess and she asked a question. Should I go and find one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you? She asked. Yes, please do, the princess replied. And so the girl went and called the baby's mother, her own mother, Moses's own mother. Verse 9 says this: take this baby. The princess says to Moses' own mother, take this baby and nurse him for me, the princess told the baby's mother. I will pay you for your help. And so the woman took her baby home and nursed him. Okay, folks, do not miss what is happening here. Moses' mother says goodbye to her son, sends him down an alligator-infested river, only to be reunited with him moments later and paid to nurse and to raise her own child. The Bible does not get any better than that, right? God's economy is not demonstrated any better than that right there. Now, this is remarkable stuff, in my opinion, right? Moments later, she's reunited with her son and paid to raise him, right? This is remarkable stuff, but here's the deal. It still does not answer, if you remember the question I posed to you earlier on, it does not answer inherently the question that I posed to begin our time together, right? So the question still remains, well, what lesson is there to learn? What's the formula that I suggested was contained in this story? What's the formula that we need to follow when staring in the face of an impossible dilemma? What lesson is there for us to learn from this mother? Quite frankly, if we're thinking about what do we learn from this mother, quite frankly, a lot of people might be quick A lot of people might be quick to cast judgment on this mother, going, man, I cannot believe she would do this. Cannot believe that she would abandon her child like this and risk such exposure. And how could she do this? How could she deliberately put him in harm's way? That might be a natural reaction. Man, I can't believe she would do that. But I'm not exactly sure that the story that this story was intended to tell. In fact, I think it's quite the opposite, actually. If we re-examine the details of this story, if we look a little closer, if we look just underneath the surface, I think we'll see that clearly Moses' mother had something else in mind. In fact, every single action and every single minute little detail of this story paints a picture for us, not of abandonment, but of love and of hope for deliverance. Okay? It all starts, this is really fascinating stuff. It all starts with her decision to put Moses in a basket, it says. She put him in a basket. The Hebrew word used for basket is the word teba, which is actually the same Hebrew word used in the book of Genesis when Noah is told to build an ark, a teba, to keep him and his family safe during the flood. Teba is literally translated as a container in which something precious is stored. Okay, and so Moses, baby Moses' his teba, his basket was meant to be for him a container, right? It was meant to be an ark of protection and of salvation for him. And just like Noah, salvation for all of humanity depended on this little ark. For Moses would soon become the one that God used to deliver his people from slavery. Right? He would grow up in the very court as the princess's adopted son. He would grow up in the very court from which he would deliver his own people. It was only in this environment that could sufficiently equip him to speak to the next Pharaoh and demand that he set his people free. It's amazing stuff. It gets better, okay? Remember that Moses' mother, she filled this basket, this teba. She lined the inside with tar. It said the Hebrew word for tamar is the Hebrew word for tar is kemar. Okay, it's the word kemar, and it's the same word, and it's the same substance that King Pharaoh made all of the Hebrew slaves mix into mortar bricks. If we just rewind one chapter earlier to Exodus 1, here's what it says, right? That the people are now slaves in Egypt. Look what it says. So the Egyptians worked for the people of Israel without mercy, and they made their lives bitter, forcing them to mix mortar, kemar, forcing them to mix mortar and to make bricks and to do all the work in the fields. They were ruthless in all of their demands. So what's the big deal about this? Here's the big deal. The same substance that Pharaoh used as a means of oppression, a mother's hand spreads as an agent of salvation for her child and for God's chosen deliverer for all his people. What once was a means for oppression soon become a means for salvation and for deliverance for an entire nation. You start adding all of this up, the big details, the little details. You start adding all of this up and you begin to see that Moses' mother, she put him, we're going, how could she do that? There was no good options, right? We start to see that Moses' mother put him into the Nile River in a literal act of obedience to Pharaoh's death sentence, but with the very intention at every moment along the way, with the very intention of preserving his life. And not only does she preserve the life of her son, but she ends up getting paid to raise him as well. Now, friends, you know, this all works out amazingly, and we get to the happy ending part of this story rather quickly as readers of this story. But don't make the mistake of thinking that this story in real time was just all like sunshine and rainbows the whole time. These, there were no doubt, were scary moments. These were no doubt unthinkable circumstances and seemingly impossible decisions to make. This was seemingly an unwinnable game that Moses' mother is forced to play. And yet every intricate detail, big and small, every intricate detail of this story is a beautiful illustration for all of us. It is a beautiful illustration of the connection that must always, always exist between the diligent use of our means and of the devout dependence on God and God's providence and God's protective care for his people. It paints a beautiful picture of the connection that must always exist between the diligent use of our means and our devout dependence on God for whatever it is that comes next. Midcurrent, I think this is where our confidence comes from. I think this is where your confidence and my confidence comes from when we are facing huge dilemmas in our life with seemingly equal horrible options. I think this is where we get our confidence. And as a result, here's what I want to suggest to you today, that every difficult decision must be made with equal parts diligence and dependence. Every decision that we make in our life must be made with, this is the formula, it must be made with equal parts diligence and dependence. Diligence and dependence. Diligence when it comes to any means and any resources that we have available to us, and dependence on God, total dependence on God for his protection and for his provision for whatever it is that comes next. When we have a difficult decision to make, right? Here's the deal. When we have a difficult decision to make, when no option seems good, we cannot just sink into, you know, solemn despair and paralyzation, right? Nor can we sit on our hands passively banking entirely on divine intervention to just bail us out. We can't do either. We can't just sit back in despair, and we can't just sit on our hands with trust that God, lightning is going to strike and God's going to show up. Here's what we do, okay? We move forward with a diligent use of whatever means that we have available to us and devout dependence on an all-powerful and an all-loving God. I'm not saying that things will always work out the way that we want them to, but if everything that we do is done with diligence and dependence, we can trust the outcomes to God. We can trust that it is ultimately gonna work out the way that it was intended to. So let me ask you once again, right? What dilemma are you facing right now? Anything? What decision are you making right now? What decision do you feel like you're forced to be making right now? What situation are you navigating right now that might benefit from the right mix of diligence and dependence? Is there a parenting decision that you need to make right now where neither option feels great? You're going like, man, this is just horrible. What do we do? I mean, is there a marriage decision that you are navigating right now? Is there a relationship decision that you feel like you need to make when it feels like it'll be hard either way? I mean, is there a big spiritual decision that maybe feels a little bit too big to make, or some kind of leap of faith that you know you need to take, but it feels like too big a step to take? Is there a career decision that you're evaluating right now going, man, this is awful. What do you do? Right? Maybe there's a big financial decision that you weren't expecting, but nonetheless, there's a massive financial decision that you are facing right now, and you don't know what you're gonna do next. Don't just sink down into a slump, but don't sit on your hands either, just expecting a miracle. You put your feet into motion, and you keep your heart and your eyes and your hands open and expectant for what God might put into them. quite frankly, friends, we as a church, and in particular, our leadership team, think board of elders, right? Our leadership team is trying to operate like this right now, at this very moment, with a diligent use of our means and an unwavering dependence on God's provision for us. That's how our leadership team, the leaders of this church, are operating right now at this very moment. See, I shared the incredibly exciting news with you just earlier today about Jonathan, the new associate pastor that we are in the process of hiring right now. And I honestly don't think I could be more excited about it. But at the same time, I'll be really honest with you about Jonathan, right? He's a way more experienced candidate than we originally thought we were going to hire. And that's really great news. But it also means he's a more expensive candidate than we originally thought that we'd hire. And so that left us with a hard choice to make, right? When we examined where we were right now as a church and what needs we have, and then when we examined that Jonathan actually is the guy who can help us fill those needs and help us move the ball down the field, we came to this realization. We go, man, we can hardly afford not to hire Jonathan, but we also had to acknowledge the reality that it was just a bigger deal than we anticipated. And so the question then became that our leaders sat around and discussed for hours at a time. We said, man, what do we do? It felt like, man, we cannot not do this right now. But at the same time, we're going, well, it's not like necessarily like a slam dunk. So what do we do? Let me tell you exactly what our leadership team has done over the last month, and in particular, over the last weeks. They have diligently, I can tell you that, they have diligently examined our means. They've diligently examined and discussed, right, our financial picture and our resources. They've examined what it is that we have, how God has gifted us as a church, and they've examined diligently everything that we just felt like we had available to us as a church. They've taken stock of where we are at right now, and they've decided to put our best foot forward into motion. And as they do that, as they have done that, they have also made an intentional decision to depend on God fully, right? To put our collective faith in Him and Him alone, to close any gap that might exist between where we are and where we feel like God is calling us to be. It is a beautiful, beautiful picture. It is a beautiful, beautiful mix of the diligence that has taken place and the dependence on God to come alongside of us at this moment right now. It's a diligent use of whatever means we have at our fingertips and a devout dependence on God that He will show up when we are attempting to follow after Him. Friends, there is no better place to be, and there is no better way to live the lives that God has called us to live. And that's how your leaders here are operating at Mid-Current Church when it comes to our collective life together. And I will be so thrilled to think that all of us would follow their lead when it comes to the individual lives that we lead every single day. Be so thrilled if we would follow that lead. Friends, the impact that we make in this world, as a church, but as individuals too, families, right? The impact that we make in this world, in this community around us, it would be so much more substantial and substantive if this was how we chose to navigate the most difficult moments in life. The kids that we raise, that the kids and the students and the teenagers that we invest into would be far better equipped to be the next generation of leaders in this world and leaders in the marketplace and leaders in the church if we modeled for them and taught them to approach life's most challenging moments like this, diligence, independence, right? I think we'd get the attention of our friends and our neighbors and our coworkers more if this is how we approach the hard moments that we all have to face at one time or another. So when the hard moments come, when the decision is there in front of us, and when neither option seems all that good, remember the boldness, and remember the bravery, and remember the faith of Moses, his mother, who did what she could and who used what she had to set God up to do what only he could do. Let me pray for us. God, we do pause here today and we give you thanks for all of the mothers and the grandmothers and the stepmothers and the foster mothers and all of the amazing women who have poured into us, God, and we're grateful for an opportunity to search the scriptures for the life of a mother who has so much to teach us, God. What an amazing picture of bold, brave faith in you, God, in the face of seemingly just an unwinnable situation. God, I pray that when we are at a similar place, God, when we're at a fork in the road and when we do not know which way to go, I pray that you would instill in us and inspire us with the same amount of bold, brave faith as Moses, his mother. God, I pray that you would help to cultivate in us the very same mix in everything we do. God, would you cultivate in us precisely where each of us need it most? God, would you cultivate in us diligence, independence? God, would you help us to diligently use whatever you have placed in our fingertips, God, and would you help us to depend on you, to put our faith fully in you for whatever it is that comes next. I think that's the only place to be. That's the only way to navigate what it is that comes our way, God, and we're praying that as we continue to follow you, God, as we put faith and hope and trust and hard work at the same time, God, when we put it all in your hands, I'm praying that you would continue to honor the steps we take toward you and the lives that we live every single day. And we pray this in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this week's message from Midcurrent Church. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Midcurrent Church is located at 200 First Street in downtown Hudson, Wisconsin. Be sure to join us on Sunday mornings, both online and in person at 9 and 10:30 a.m.